Chapter 6. Captain Jorgen, up and out Bedoms, had put the whole village of Landrian under an amicable cross-examination, and was returning to the King Arthur's Arms to breakfast, none the wiser for his trouble, when he beheld the young fisherman advancing to meet him, accompanied by a stranger. A glance at this stranger assured the captain that he could be no other than the seafaring man, and the captain was about to hail him as a fellow craftsman, when the two stood still and silent before the captain, and the captain stood still, silent, and wondering before them. "Why, what's this?" cried the captain, when at last he broke the silence. "You two are alike. You two are much alike. What's this?" Not a word was answered on the other side, until after the seafaring brother had got hold of the captain's right hand, and the fisherman brother had got hold of the captain's left hand, and if ever the captain had had his fill of handshaking, from his birth to that hour, he had it then. And presently up, and spoke the two brothers, one at a time, two at a time, two dozen at a time, for the bewilderment into which they plunged the captain, until he gradually had Hugh Raybrock's deliverance made clear to him, and also unraveled the fact that the person referred to in the half-obliterated paper was Tregarthen himself. "Formerly, dear Captain Jorgen," said Alfred, "of Landrian, you recollect? Kitty and her father came to live at Steepways after Hugh shipped on his last voyage." Eh, cried the captain, fetching a breath. "Now you have me in tow. Then your brother here don't know his sister-in-law, that is to be so much as by name? Never saw her, never heard of her." Eh, cried the captain. "Why then we everyone go back together, paper, writer, and all, and take Tregarthen into the secret we kept from him." "Surely," said Alfred, "we can't help it now. We must go through with our duty." "Not a doubt," returned the captain. "Give me an arm apiece, and let us set this ship shape." So walking up and down in the shrill wind on the wild moor, while the neglected breakfast cooled within, the captain and the brothers settled their course of action. It was that they should all proceed by the quickest means they could secure to Barnstaple, and there look over the father's books and papers in the lawyer's keeping, as Hugh had proposed to himself to do, if ever he reached home. That, enlightened or unenlightened, they should then return to Steepways, and go straight to Mr. Tregarthen, and tell him all they knew, and see what came of it, and act accordingly. Lastly, that when they got there they should enter the village with all precautions against Hugh's being recognized by any chance, and that to the captain should be consigned the task of preparing his wife and mother for his restoration to this life. "For you see," quoth Captain Jorgen, touching the last head, "it requires caution anyway, great joys being as dangerous as great griefs, if not more dangerous, as being more uncommon and therefore less provided against in this round world of ours. And besides, I should like to free my name with the ladies, and take you home again at your brightest and luckiest. So don't let's throw away a chance of success." The captain was highly lauded by the brothers for his kind interest and foresight. "And now stop," said the captain, coming to a standstill, and looking from one brother to the other, with quite a new rigging of wrinkles about each eye. "You are of opinion, to the elder, that you are rather slow?" "I assure you I am very slow," said the honest Hugh. "Well," replied the captain, "I assure you that to the best of my belief I am rather smart. Now a slow man ain't good at quick business, is he?" That was clear to both. "You," said the captain, turning to the younger brother, "are a little in love, ain't you?"
"Not a little, Captain Jorgen."
"Much or little, you're sort preoccupied, ain't you?" It was impossible to be denied. "And a sort preoccupied man ain't good at quick business, is he?" said the captain. Equally clear on all sides. "Now," said the captain, "I ain't in love myself, and I've made many a smart run across the ocean, and I should like to carry on, and go ahead with this affair of yours, and make a run slick through it. Shall I try?"
Will you hand it over to me? They were both delighted to do so, and thanked him heartily.
Good, said the captain, taking out his watch. This is 8:30 a.m, Friday morning. I'll jot that down, and we'll compute how many hours we've been out when we run into your mother's post office.
There. The entry's made, and now we go ahead.
They went ahead so well that before the Barnstaple lawyer's office was open next morning, the captain was sitting whistling on the step of the door, waiting for the clerk to come down the street with his key and open it. But instead of the clerk, there came the master, with whom the captain fraternized on the spot to an extent that utterly confounded him. As he personally knew both Hugh and Alfred, there was no difficulty in obtaining immediate access to such of the father's papers as were in his keeping. These were chiefly old letters and cash accounts, from which the captain, with a shrewdness and dispatch that left the lawyer far behind, established with perfect clearness, by noon, the following particulars. That one Lawrence Clissold had borrowed of the deceased, at a time when he was a thriving young tradesman in the town of Barnstaple, the sum of £500. That he had borrowed it on the written statement, that it was to be laid out in furtherance of a speculation which he expected would raise him to independence, he being, at the time of writing that letter, no more than a clerk in the house of Dringworth Brothers, America Square, London. That the money was borrowed for a stipulated period, but that, when the term was out, the aforesaid speculation failed, and Clissold was without means of repayment. That, hereupon, he had written to his creditor, in no very persuasive terms, vaguely requesting further time. That the creditor had refused this concession, declaring that he could not afford delay. That Clissold then paid the debt, accompanying the remittance of the money with an angry letter describing it as having been advanced by a relative to save him from ruin. That, in acknowledging the receipt, Raybrock had cautioned Clissold to seek to borrow money of him no more, as he would never so risk money again. Before the lawyer, the captain said never a word in reference to these discoveries. But when the papers had been put back in their box, and he and his two companions were well out of the office, his right leg suffered for it, and he said, "So far this run's begun with a fair wind and a prosperous. For don't you see that all this agrees with that dutiful trust in his father maintained by the slow member of the Raybrock family? Whether the brothers had seen it before or no, they saw it now. Not that the captain gave them much time to contemplate the state of things at their ease, for he instantly whipped them into a chaise again, and bore them off to Steepways. Although the afternoon was but just beginning to decline when they reached it, and it was broad daylight, still they had no difficulty, by dint of muffing the returned sailor up, and ascending the village, rather than descending it, in reaching Tregarthen's cottage unobserved. Kitty was not visible, and they surprised Tregarthen sitting writing in the small bay window of his little room. Sir, said the captain, instantly shaking hands with him, pen and all, I'm glad to see you, sir. How do you do, sir? I told you you'd think better of me by and by, and I congratulate you on going to do it. Here the captain's eye fell on Tom Pettifer, engaged in preparing some cookery at the fire. That critter, said the captain, smiting his leg, is a born steward, and never ought to have been in any other way of life. Stop where you are, Tom, and make yourself useful. Now, Tregarthen, I'm going to try a chair. Accordingly the captain drew one close to him, and went on. This loving member of the Raybrock family you know, sir. This slow member of the same family you don't know, sir. While, these two are brothers, fact. Hugh's come to life again, and here he stands. Now see here, my friend. You don't want to be told that he was cast away, but you do want to be told, for there's a purpose in it, that he was cast away with another man. That man by name was Lawrence Clissold. At the mention of this name, Tregarthen started and changed color. What's the matter? Said the captain. He was a fellow clerk of mine 35 and 30 years ago.
True, said the captain, immediately catching at the clue. Dringworth Brothers, America Square, London City. The other started again, nodded, and said, that was the house. Now, pursued the captain, between those two men cast away there arose a mystery concerning the round sum of £500. Again Tregarthen started, changing color. Again the captain said, what's the matter? As Tregarthen only answered, please to go on, the captain recounted, very tersely and plainly, the nature of Clissold's wanderings on the barren island, as he had condensed them in his mind from the seafaring man. Tregarthen became greatly agitated during this recital, and at length exclaimed, Clissold was the man who ruined me. I have suspected it for many a long year, and now I know it. And how, said the captain, drawing his chair still closer to Tregarthen, and clapping his hand upon his shoulder, how may you know it? When we were fellow clerks, replied Tregarthen, in that London house, it was one of my duties to enter daily in a certain book an account of the sums received that day by the firm, and afterward paid into the bankers. One memorable day, a Wednesday, the black day of my life, among the sums I so entered, was one of £500. I begin to make it out, said the captain. Yes? It was one of Clissold's duties to copy from this entry a memorandum of the sums which the clerk employed to go to the bankers paid in there. It was my duty to hand the money to Clissold. It was Clissold's to hand it to the clerk, with that memorandum of his writing. On that Wednesday I entered a sum of £500 received. I handed that sum, as I handed the other sums in the day's entry, to Clissold. I was absolutely certain of it at the time. I have been absolutely certain of it ever since. A sum of £500 was afterward found by the house, to have been that day wanting from the bag, from Clissold's memorandum, and from the entries in my book. Clissold, being questioned, stood upon his perfect clearness in the matter, and emphatically declared that he asked no better than to be tested by Tregarthen's book. Apostrophe my book was examined, and the entry of £500 was not there. How not there, said the captain, when you made it yourself? Tregarthen continued. I was then questioned. Had I made the entry? Certainly I had. The house produced my book, and it was not there. I could not deny my book. I could not deny my writing. I knew there must be forgery by someone, but the writing was wonderfully like mine, and I could impeach no one, if the house could not. I was required to pay the money back. I did so, and I left the house, almost broken-hearted, rather than remain there, even if I could have done so, with a dark shadow of suspicion always on me. I returned to my native place, Lanrian, and remained there, clerk to a mine, until I was appointed to my little post here. I well remember, said the captain, that I told you that, if you had no experience of ill judgments on deceiving appearances, you were a lucky man. You went hurt at that, and I see why. I'm sorry. Thus it is, said Tregarthen. Of my own innocence I have of course been sure. It has been at once my comfort and my trial. Of Clissold I have always had suspicions almost amounting to certainty, but they have never been confirmed until now. For my daughter's sake and for my own I have carried this subject in my own heart, as the only secret of my life, and have long believed that it would die with me. Well, my good sir, said the captain cordially, the present question is, and will be long, I hope, concerning living and not dying. Now, here are our two honest friends, the loving Raybrock and the Slow. Here they stand, agreed on one point, on which I'd back 'em round the world, and right across it from north to south, and then again from east to west, and through it, from your deepest Cornish mine to China. It is, that they will never use this same so often mentioned sum of money, and that restitution of it must be made to you. These two, the loving member and the slow, for the sake of the right, and of their father's memory, will have it ready for you tomorrow. take it, and ease their minds and mine, and end the most unfortunate transaction. Tregarthen took the captain by the hand, and gave his hand to each of the young men, but positively and finally answered no. He said, they trusted to his word, and he was glad of it, and at rest in his mind. But there was no proof, and the money must remain as it was. All were very earnest over this, and earnestness in men, when they are right and true, is so impressive, that Mr. Pettifer deserted his cookery and looked on quite moved. And so, said the captain, so we come as that lawyer critter over yonder, where we were this morning might to mere proof. Do we? We must have it. Must we? How? From this Clissold's wanderings, and from what you say, it ain't hard to make out that there was a neat forgery of your writing committed by the too smart rowdy, that was grease and ashes when I made his acquaintance, and a substitution of a forged leaf in your book for a real and torn leaf torn out. Now was that real and true leaf then and there destroyed? No, for says he, in his drunken way, he slipped it into a crack in his own desk. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.